Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Hello, listeners. Good morning or afternoon, wherever you happen to be. We're so glad to have you with us today. This is Jeannie St. John Taylor, and my co-host Maxine Marcellini is with us. Hi, Max.
Hi, Jeannie. It's a wonderful day when I get to talk to you one more time.
I know.
How's your day?
We actually could do this more often, you know. I mean, actually,
well,
just talk on the phone.
Well, neither one of us seemed to conjure up enough time to do it really a lot more often.
I know. Well, you know, let's get right to our topic today. We have an amazing guest on, and he is actually the man who wrote the foreword for your new book. And this is Cece Murphy, and we're going to interview him about two of his books, When a Man You Love Was Abused and Not Quite Healed. Cece is the veteran author of 135 books, some of them he's co-written. And that includes the New York Times bestseller 90 Minutes in Heaven with Don Piper and Gifted Hands, the Ben Carson story with Dr. Ben Carson. That's kind of fun. His books have sold in the millions and have brought hope and encouragement to countless people around the world. And Cece stays busy as a professional writer. He travels extensively to speak on topics such as writing, spiritual growth, caregiving, significant living, sexual abuse, and recovery. I think Cece, this is probably one of the topics closest to your heart, isn't it? The sexual addiction, the sexual abuse.
Yeah, it is, because I am a survivor, and it's just something that I deal with, and I'm. Wish other people would, you know, face some of their issues.
And is that one of the reasons that you wrote the foreword for Maxine's book?
Well, plus the fact that I like Maxine.
I do, too.
Thank you.
And it was a good book. So there are three reasons.
Yeah. Thank
and
you.
I specifically sought Cece out because I knew he had
you
a
did.
Heart for the children, and I really wanted him and his words on that page.
Thank you.
Cece, you write about the losses of those who are sexually abused. I know that seems a little obvious that there would be losses, but I don't think we all really understand that. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. When we were children, that's what we're talking about, is abuse that happens in childhood. We were damaged. Our innocence was taken away. So I can think of three immediate ones. If we're abused, it means we were not living in a healthy, nurturing environment. Even if we had loving families, somehow we never felt loved. Second, most of us finally realized in some way we lost control. Our bodies were controlled by somebody else, and it left an emotional imprint on us. For instance, we didn't have boundaries like normal people because we didn't know what they were. We had little self-worth. So those are the kind of things I'm talking about.
Do you think it's inherent in children to know when something wrong is being done to them? You say you didn't have boundaries. Did you know that it wasn't right?
Yes and no. I mean, in a sense, you know that something's not right. They're not doing it right. But
yeah.
Unless you have a corrective, unless you're taught properly, how do you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I was probably an adult before I realized there are just some boundaries that we all need. But I just never learned any as a child, or very few of them.
Yeah. Maxine, do you want to tell the listeners also the name of your book, the title, and and tell us what you think about what Cease just said and how that relates to the man who was in your book.
Well, my book's title is Mother's Fury, and it's dealing with abusive mothers. It could easily fit the same pattern with an abusive father, but I wanted to bring forth the issue with mothers because they have the majority of time with their children, and we expect them to be the nurturing parent. But some of them don't have that going on, and they aren't protective. And the same thing Cease was just saying, the children don't feel loved. They grow up feeling like they aren't worthy of love, and many of them don't know how to process that, and then they carry it forward into their adult lives. They become victims in childhood, but don't understand there's another way until they can figure out how to break loose from some of that. I like what Cease has brought out in the When a Man You Married is
love,
that
a man you love.
Yeah.
When a man you love is not quite healed. What there's issues in there, Cease, where you say the people that the relationships that are formed become part of the process of working through the abuse. And it's difficult for solid relationships, and that's what I found in Charles Rice's life was the same situation. His adult relationships were definitely impacted by his childhood experience.
Oh, sure. You know, part of being a child in a healthy home is you learn to navigate the social system. You learn how to get along with people. But you also learn a healthy self-respect. If you don't have that in childhood, you start out with a great gross disadvantage.
Mm. Hey, Cease, you talk about this really freely now because you're writing books about it. Could you do that as a child? And when, and if not, when did you begin to talk freely about it?
Oh, yeah, right. I was 51 before I even began to deal with my abuse. And
yeah.
By the way, I've since learned that this is very typical of males. There's some kids who deal with it when they're, you know, after it happens, they talk about it. And those are some ways the lucky ones. But there are a lot of us, like me, and I think I'm very typical, we have what we call amnesia. We forget it. And then somewhere it comes up and we have to face it.
Mm. Did you ever face your abuser?
No. And by the way, mine was just not just sexual abuse. There was a lot of physical abuse and came from my mother was my sexual abuser. My father beat me a lot.
Yeah.
But both of them were dead before I really began to deal with these issues.
Do you think people should confront their abuser? Max, did your you first, Maxine? Did Charles Rice ever confront his abuser?
Well, he tried. You know, the thing with Charles Rice is he attempted to do this on different occasions, but it didn't end up going well for him. She would either beat on him more when he tried to confront the issues, and then after he left home, she stalked him. And then even when she needed his help and he again had hope that maybe things would be different, within a period of time she turned on him again. Mm. And things would seem hopeful and then go back to the pattern of her not working on her end of the deal as well as she should have. And so reconciliation isn't always a guaranteed end result. But
and so
they
that's
try. Somehow they try.
Yeah,
and that's back to my original question. Do you think people should address their abusers?
I say before you take that step, ask yourself what you anticipate. What do you want to happen? See, typically what we want is justice or confession, or we want those people to acknowledge it. And that, to be very candid, that rarely happens. What we have to do is decide what we want. And if we're not... if we're not willing to settle for less than confession, I'd say forget it.
Mm. You know, you talk about your inner abuser. What do you mean by that?
Well, we know about the outward one, the beatings, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, whatever. Those are all kinds of abuses. But the inner abuse is how we hurt ourselves and beat up on ourselves. And we all, you know, those of us who are hurt in any way, we do it all the time. You know, you've got this little voice in our head that says we're worthless, we're not of any value. That's what I mean by the inner critic or the inner abuser.
Yeah.
And they grow up learning that very honestly because they're being told, the voices they hear around them are saying you're no good. They're being mean to them. And when that happens, the child is internalizing that they're a bad person, that they aren't worthy.
Right.
Out of that is difficult.
May I give you an example? My father not only beat me, but for some reason he always called me lazy, and so I really grew up believing I was lazy. And yet, as an adult, I look at what I've done. I've done a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned I wrote 135 books.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you can say that with great awe, but at the same time, I was a driven man. I was trying to prove that I was worth something.
Yeah.
No normal person writes that many books. Not anywhere near that. That's not normal.
It's obvious that you were driven. It's obvious.
Sure.
But you know what?
Thank you.
That is actually a positive result, strangely.
Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
Well,
okay,
see, there's no...
Go ahead.
You're supposed to say, there's no end to it. It's positive in that I've accomplished things, but it's always I need to do more. Until there's some resolution, some healing, it drives you, and that's not a pleasant feeling.
No.
Yeah, and with Charles Rice, he was looking for his mother's approval. There's a point in time where she calls him a whiz kid or something, and he just can't hardly contain himself. She did that. She called me that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for one moment in time, she thought I was smart.
Mm. You know, see, as you talk in your next book, Not Quite Healed, you talk about survivors never being fully healed. What do you mean by that?
Well, first, you know, what those things that happen to us in childhood affect us the rest of our lives. Maybe not painfully, but they keep coming out in all kinds of ways. And it's an ongoing process. Our total personality has been warped and damaged. And the thing we have to remind ourselves is what happened to us probably took place in secret. I mean, they didn't do it in an open mall. So we've had to live with the hidden pain, and so often it was so deep, personal, and painful that it takes a long time to dig ourselves out of those holes.
Yeah. Is it possible to say, forget the past and move on? Can you do that?
You can say anything you want, but it doesn't work that way.
Right,
Why Maxine?
Not?
Yeah, it really doesn't. But you have to learn to walk through it and with it and how to discern truth from a lie. And the only way I've found that works for the people I talk to is to understand how God thinks of you, what God has done for you, because he will be your steadying force, the foundation to fall back upon for truth. If he says you're the apple of his eye, he loves you with an everlasting love, he has a purpose for you, and the people that you care about, them, you know, their opinions, are saying something different, you've got to learn to choose God's view.
Yeah, and let me give you an example, and I totally agree with you, actually. Just recently, I was talking to an author I know, and he just out of nowhere, he said, "Well, you know, I was abused as a kid too." And I said, "No, I didn't know that." He said, "But I'm over it." And I didn't argue with him, but I looked at him. Mm-hmm. He's about 5'7", 5'8", weighs well over 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that all obesity is handled that way, but this is one way they eat.
Yeah.
It's their form of medication. My brothers became alcoholics. Some people turned to drugs, pornography. You know, we all have to have some kind of salve. In my case, God was so gracious to me, and I became a believer, and that began to change my life. And I met a wonderful woman who helped change me, too.
So was your brother abused, too, or were you singled out?
Well, I had three brothers, and none of them went... they all became alcoholics. They all died of the disease. None of them ever admitted it, but one time I said something to my baby brother about his drinking, which was very thoughtless of me. But anyway, I said something about it. He said, "You don't get it, do you? It's the only time I'm not hurting."
Oh my. Yeah.
Mm. So that's a pretty good indication, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
That is a pretty good indication. You think it's a good idea to break the silence and talk about the abuse. Why do you think that's important?
Well, you know, those of us who are damaged in childhood, this was done usually in secret or at least in private, and it stays a secret and private until we speak it. Here's something I say. I only know of myself what I say of myself. By that I mean, when I tell somebody else and they hear me and believe me, that's my gateway to freedom. That's why we need to tell Jesus Christ, but we also need God's people. James says, confess your sins, your faults to one another. It also means confess your secrets to one another. And when they hear us and believe us, that becomes affirmation and healing for us.
What I like to tell people is that you're as sick as the secrets you keep.
Once those are out, which is
why I try to, this book that I've written, Mother's Fury, is to try to get people to release their own stories. So what Cesis just said, you're nearer the freedom. You're finding the freedom once you can say it out loud, once you can write it down, once you can get it moving. It's coming out of you then. And the shame is falling off of you when things come out of you, is what I find.
Listeners, we're talking to author Cesis Murphy about his two books, When the Man You Love Was Abused and Not Quite Healed. And we're also talking to my co-host, Maxine Marcellini, about Mother's Fury, her new book that's just now coming out. Cesis, if you tell other people, how do you know whom to tell? And how do you know the right time to do that? Because couldn't that be a little scary, it seems to me?
Extremely so. It took me a long time. You see, my wife was the first person I told, and my best friend, and both of those, because I'd been married 25 years before I ever told my wife because I hadn't dealt with it. But over those years, I really figured out something. She loved me. In fact, one time I said to her, even if I beat you, you'd still love me. And she just looked at me and she said, but you'd never beat me. And I said, yeah, but suppose I did. And she said, I can't imagine it. And but what I was really trying to say to her, and she got it, was that she loved me unconditionally because so often people would like me because I did nice things.
Mm-hmm.
But she loved me just because of who I was. And that was... That was the breakthrough for me, but the real issue for survivors of any kind of abuse is this. Somewhere along the line, you have to take the risk and tell somebody. Yeah. And it has to be somebody that you have some sense that maybe you can trust them.
Mm. Maxine, are you the first person Charles told, or had he told other people about this story?
Well, that part I don't know, but I do know that I am the first person that he wrote his story out to. He'd come off a camera from working on a camera when I was filming some family shows, and I was talking about moms and dads, and he came off tears in his eyes, said that wasn't my experience. He started showing me his scars and telling me some of what had happened to him, and I said, Charles, it shouldn't have ever happened to you. Why don't you, would you consider writing out your story, sending it to me, and maybe we can help make a difference for somebody else because of your story? He says, wow, that is a big concept. I have never thought of doing that before. And you know what? He did it. He put himself, sat down and started writing this out longhand. And as he did it, the flashbacks would come. So I believe I'm honestly the first person he really let it all out to.
Cesis, does that sound similar about when you started telling your story? Did you start getting flashbacks?
Oh, I was already. Yeah, I got the flashbacks first. That's how I began to deal with it. See, because See, there's a form of denial that's called it's amnesia, but that's really what it was. And see, I lived with that amnesia. And when the memory started coming back, then I think I was ready, and I told my wife, and I called my best friend, and he spent several hours just letting me cry and talk to him.
Oh. Wow.
And that's important, to have someone who will listen, you know, and someone who will take you seriously. You've got to have this support group, I think, around you of trustworthy individuals who love you despite where you've come from, and they'll continue to. So,
this is a question
about... What do you think about the God factor in here? Do people feel like God doesn't like them? I mean, I know there was kind of a crisis for Charles Rice with God.
You want me to answer?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. I never had that question because I wasn't a Christian, didn't grow up in a kind of a Christian environment. However, those who did... That's one of their questions. Where was God? If God really loved me, why did he let this happen? And somehow we have to help them. They have to learn to understand that just because bad things happen doesn't mean God doesn't love us. It means people are bad and they do bad things to people.
You know, I have two friends that told me the same thing. One of them was raped repeatedly by her father from age 13 to 18, and another one was a victim of ritualistic satanic abuse. And both of them questioned God like that when it was going on, and both of them, as they turned to God and got better later and dealt with it, not meaning that they're healed, but dealt with it, they both said that they realized that God actually was protecting them during that time, because he was protecting their spirits. Their abusers had control of their bodies, but not their spirits. So, both of you, this question's for both of you. Do you think parent and child can ever reconcile, fully reconcile, or even partially reconcile?
Reconcile what? I'm not clear.
The relationship between the parent and the child.
Between a parent and child, can you ever reconcile with a parent and child?
Well, I can only speak for myself. Both my parents were dead before I began to deal with them. But you know what? I forgave them. Part of the reason I was able to forgive them is I realized that both of them, in their own way, they were victims too. I learned from my... I have three older sisters. I learned from them that my mother had been sexually assaulted by her father for a number of years. My own father was a victim of a lot of physical abuse from both his parents, because they lived in that era where if the kid didn't do anything you wanted, you just whacked them until they gave in. And so that was his way of dealing with his own issues, and I was one of his victims. But I was able to understand that and finally say, okay, I forgive them.
And this is why I so want this book to go forward and help stop the generational cycles of abuse.
Yep.
I want the abuser to get their hands on this book as well, because I've got helps for abuser too. There's a reach for fresh hope for the abuser and a reach for fresh joy for the abused. And if they're ready, they can move into that and start working through the pages. But you asked a question here, Jeannie, about can there be reconciliation?
Right.
One of the endorsers of this book that I asked to endorse was Kathy Collard Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And she was an abusive mother. She came out of it and has a
physically,
good relationship.
Right, not sexually?
Physically abusive to her child, probably verbally too. She said, my first book, Out of Control, told how God delivered me from being a child abuser. Maxine's book looks at the problem of child abuse from the child's viewpoint, and it's a powerful, compelling, and yes, painful book, but oh so very needed. I wish it had been available when I was struggling with abusive anger. I believe it would have helped me. I feared I was ruining my child's life, but I also believed God no longer loved me. So the abuser didn't feel loved. So Marcellini includes help for both the abused child and the abuser. I trust it will help others know there is healing power for that child and God's faithful love and power for the abuser. There was for me and my child. Today we share a fabulous relationship.
Yeah.
So for some, there's reconciliation. like Cece has said, though, the majority I don't think it takes place for, because the abuser needs to get on board to help the abused sense that there was a regret and a remorse, and then start demonstrating a new way of communicating with that child.
Kind of hard to comprehend that the abuser would not want to get on board, but we have time for one last thing. Cece, could you tell us, Maxine told us what she hopes for from her book. Could you tell us what you hope for from both of yours? Yours were just, you know, they're just so raw and so helpful.
Yeah, by the way, I also have a twice-weekly blog called menshatteringthesilence.blogspot.com. And that's really gutsy, where we really talk about as openly as we can. And so part of my goal is I want this to be brought out. You know, one thing about you women, you were able, you started talking about this and writing about this 30 years ago. When I first started to try to get this book out, nobody would buy it. I'm a well-published author. I publish almost everything I write, but nobody, they kept saying to me, men don't get abused, or why would, you know, who'd buy it? Finally, 6 years later, Kriegel took a chance on it. So for me, it really is shattering the silence to bring this out into the open.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very thankful that you have shattered your silence, Cecil, you are helping other men to come forward. You are an example of a man who steps forward, and that is going to encourage so many other people to do that. What I have in my circle of people, too, though, is women who have been abused who aren't out from behind the denial.
Right.
Some of them are in their 50s, 60s, and beyond that, because they don't want to tell family secrets and bring that out into the open. And you've dealt with that well in your book, but in concealing some names so that families weren't going to be outed, so to speak, and more problems be landing on the abused head. I appreciate that, but the abused still needs to move forward into the healing, whether they want the secret to come out or not. They can do it privately, in my opinion, and get about what God wants them to do to become who he wants them to be. And not, your pain has not been wasted, Cecil. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah. Well,
thank you for joining
me
today. I appreciate that. And for that beautiful forward.
It's a great, great interview, both of you. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week, listeners, same time.
Thanks for having me as your guest.
You are welcome. Thank you.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.